Are you ready for the weekend yet? We have events, news, and a guest for you to enjoy this Lake Life weekend. Merry Christmas to you. Thank you for tuning in. Lake Life Weekend Podcast. My name is Dirk. We have weekend 51 ahead of us, and it is Christmas Eve coming this Sunday. So I hope you have a good time, family gatherings, and enjoy this end of the season, end of the year. Please stay tuned. We will have a rerun of our Detroit Lakes Mountain recording with Jeff Staley, and learn about our new gem here in Lakes Country, the Detroit Mountain. They added some slides, and it's a great place for you and the family to spend, especially with the snowflakes falling now just recently. Before we go into the interview, please here celebrate with us 10-year anniversary of Melander's Santa Truck out of Managa, where they began 10 years ago and continue to travel to spread Christmas joy. There's an article in the Frazee Forum, and I thought that was worth sharing. Also this weekend, some events coming up. Xanta at Zorbis on December 23rd, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Xanta will be at Zorbis. Enjoy the treats and snap a photo with Santa. Free movie Elf, also December 23rd, 10 a.m. through 11 a.m. in the Washington Square Mall. There's a free movie again this Saturday. Live music at the Holiday Inn, 9 p.m. through midnight this Saturday, December 23rd as well. Performance by Uptown Life. And then on December 24th, 1 through 4 p.m., there's the 6th Annual Humane Society Sleigh Ride Fundraiser at JF Stables. It's on 21168 Klein Road. That will be all on our website, lakelifeweekend.com. There is going to be like a family event along with sleigh rides. There's pony rides, a bonfire, buggy rides, cookies, beverages, and more. $10 for adults or an item from the Humane Society wish list. So it's a fundraiser event. Enjoy that. And on the 26th of December, Kids Day at the museum. So if you're off and you have some time to go make a trip with the family, enjoy activities for kids, board games, puzzles, scavenger hunt, and more at the Becker County Museum on Summit Avenue in Detroit Lakes. Yeah, I truly appreciate you joining in again. This was a very nice year. We are thankful for that. You have a good Christmas weekend ahead, and now enjoy our interview with Jeff Staley from Detroit Mountain. Thank you, and have a great weekend. Well, hello. I'm here now with Jeff Staley from Detroit Mountain, Detroit Mountain Recreational Area, as you probably know. And yeah, I'm excited. Thank you for coming, and welcome, Jeff.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. The mountain is a large monument in the area, and I'm really excited to have Jeff here today. He probably does not remember, but I was actually I saw him for the very first time probably 3 years ago with my son Harry on the lake at the Polar Plunge, and there was still everything in preparations. You had 3 displays there, and you were introducing the project to the public for the very first time. And I had a dialogue with you, and I was really excited. I was new to the area. I just relocated to Detroit Lakes, and I was looking forward to something to happen. You had a little hill on the ice, and I think there was a little sledding going on, and my son Harry was only like 5, mm-hmm. and we had a really great day. I remember that very much. And now it's all present. So tell me, how long has it been preparing? How long was the preparation for opening it up? Did it take 5 years? Or?
Sure. Yeah, I remember that. I have a good memory. that was 2013, and we created a little mini tubing hill on the lake. So we had a friend with a skid steer and pushed up a pile of snow and some of the old tubes from the original facility we were using.
It was even historic equipment.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So the group that got together formed in 2010. Okay. So the project has been going on since then. Certainly there was lots of ideas tossed around with individuals in the community, you know, trying to figure out a way to get the mountain reopened. Uh-huh. But really it picked up traction in 2010.
And you as an individual, and you're the general manager of the facilities today, is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah, so you run the operation. And did you come as a part of the group as a volunteer? Were you then hired? What's your background before and until 2013?
Sure. Yeah, I was with the group originally in 2010. So I'm one of the founding members of the nonprofit Detroit Mountain Recreation Area. Mm-hmm. And was formerly the president of the group until being hired as the general manager
so
just prior to opening.
You're a founding member.
Yes.
Good. Okay.
Yep. And my background, I was working as a human resource manager at Lake Shirts at the time of being involved with this. But my degree is in Parks and Recreation Administration from Colorado State University.
Really?
So this is my background.
Perfect fit.
I do have a couple years experience working at a ski area, at Winter Park ski area in Colorado, and have worked for the City of Fort Collins Parks and Rec Department as well. So, you know, the recreation field is my field of study and what I'm passionate about.
Interesting. Are you a Colorado native?
I am not a Colorado native. I am a New York native.
Really?
I was born in Virginia, but grew up in New York and moved to Colorado for college.
In the Catskills Mountains? Where did you grow up in New York?
Western New York, Rochester, New York.
Rochester, okay. Yeah, I've been a couple of times to New York, not only New York City, but I've been in the Catskill Mountains. One of my friends was a foreign exchange student there while I was here. So anyways. So
as Minnesota is, it's a beautiful state.
It's
not all New York City, like people think. It's a much bigger state than that, and very similar to Minnesota and topography and terrain.
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
Climate.
Yep. No, I know that. So interesting. So you come in Virginia, New York, East Coast. And then Colorado, college, and then you settled in the middle of it all in Minnesota.
Yeah.
And you arrived when, if I may ask?
Well, my wife and I met while working at Winter Park Resort, and my wife is originally from Detroit Lakes.
Hmm.
So we moved to Minnesota in 1996. And lived in Minneapolis for about 10 or 11 years before moving to Detroit Lakes.
Okay. So you're here 10 years now in Detroit Lakes?
Yeah.
Okay, interesting. And then employed Lake Shirts, and then also a big supporter, I believe, of the mountain, at least from the private individuals there. So you have been engaged for the past 7 years, or shortly after you arrived, 2010, and then 13 opened the mountain, or 14?
14, November of 2014.
Okay, so yeah, we have 3 years, three winters behind us.
Correct. Yep.
And so tell us a little bit of, was it very difficult? Just short, it must have been a challenge to plan and prepare picking up a historic site as historic as it can be. How old is the site? When was it first used?
Yeah, it was not an easy task from the point of the idea to actually, you know, turning on the lifts and starting to send people up the hill. So that's a story in and of itself, certainly. The history of Detroit Mountain, it was family owned and operated, since the 50s, and a group of NDSU engineering students really get to receive credit for first skiing out at the site. And asking the landowner if they could cut some skiing runs and put in a rope tow. So that group started as the Holiday Ski Club. We've got a great storyboard within our lodge, that talks about the first skiers out there through the Beckeris family that owned and operated it for many years.
Interesting. So there was a group and holiday skiers because they came through Christmas to their families, and then they wanted to do something.
Yeah, I would assume. I've met a couple of the individuals.
Oh, really?
The majority of them are in their 80s now. Some are deceased. I'm not really sure. I guess I never asked that question specifically, why they chose the name the Holiday Ski Club. But you're probably right on track where. The group got together over the holidays and...
They escaped the family. No, no. No, interesting. Okay, so in the 50s, you said.
Yep.
So 60 years ago, we had the initial beginnings of a Detroit Mountain. And then it was owner-occupied from a family since that till... When did they close?
Yeah, it had changed hands a couple times and eventually closed in, roughly 2004.
Okay.
So it had been closed, for 10 years before our group, started gaining traction and getting the movement started to reopen it. So, I think that was a big benefit for us in that, a decade had gone by.
Mm-hmm.
And, the nostalgia or the, just not being able to use the facility, the weight of that kind of sunk in to everybody that, boy, we wish, this was back in operation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I mean, I've been there only a handful of times, unfortunately, but I have been there with Harry on the sledding, on the Bunny Hill, and we also tried some of the hills. I'm not a real skier, so I like it because it's not too steep, so it's right down my alley. And my son is very young, so it's perfect. I'm not scared that he, it's a good for beginning stages. So I enjoy it and I love the facilities and it's something really huge and I get that. So tell us a little bit about let's speak about winter. Let's also speak about summer though. And I'm really interested in goals, after three winters, you probably have an estimate. Like we, you must have had goals, and did you meet those? Like visitorship, how has it been a success? I think it did, but has it really been a success so far?
Yeah, absolutely. There's no question. It has been a success, and that success came from just what I was saying earlier that people missed it for a decade. The overwhelming theme when we were bringing this back was that people told stories of either learning to ski at the area themselves or parents and grandparents talking about teaching their children to ski at the area. So that's what
memories.
Those are the memories that people have. And like you were saying with your son, it's a perfect area to teach kids how to ski. It doesn't have a lot of vertical elevation, but there's certainly some very steep terrain there. But it's an area where there's a great variety and, there's just a perfect place to learn how to ski. And really as an industry, 75% of the people that claim themselves as skiers learn to ski on an area, similar in size to Detroit Mountain.
Okay.
You find very few people that say, yes, I learned how to ski at Vail or I learned how to ski at Aspen.
Yeah.
Yes, you travel there and you vacation there and you ultimately ski there, but very...
Once you can really use, take advantage
right,
of it because
right.
long slopes, difficult, could be scary. No, I hear you. I get it.
And we've had goals from the beginning. Obviously, that's very important to us, and that was part of our planning processes, you know, to determine, you know, what number of visitors we would have each season and how to be profitable. So we have exceeded our initial goal was 25,000 visits. We have, you know, far exceeded that each season that we have been open. So yeah, very, very successful. And, you know, we've made some improvements each season as well because of that success.
Okay, you were able to reinvest already.
Exactly, exactly. So after the first season, we had a rope tow in our beginner area, and that was just very difficult for you know, small children and inexperienced to use, and we were able to purchase and install a magic carpet lift, which is the, you know, the ski up kind of the moving concourse type, you know, that, you know, just made the learning area that much better because it eliminated some of that frustration that people experience, and that's something you want to remove through the learning process. You want, you know, the right amount of challenge without all the added frustration. So, you know, learning to ski and going downhill is challenging enough. You don't want challenge to come trying to get up the hill as well.
That's true. Let's not start right there with the frustration.
So we made that improvement after the first season. And then after the second season, we relocated our tubing area because after the first season we found it just wasn't large enough to support the demand that we had for it. So we increased the size, relocated and doubled the size of the tubing facility, and added another warming lodge to support that traffic.
Building.
Yes. So that happened, and then we cut additional ski runs as well to open up more downhill skiing terrain. So, you know, both great improvements, you know, after the second season. And now we feel like we are in a good spot to kind of get comfortable in the operation now that we can support the demand of the tubing. And we've added some additional trails so we can continue to support the demand of the skiers as well.
So I didn't even know that, that you grew that much. I knew there was the tubing improvements. I read that, but I didn't know you even cut more trails for the skiing. Interesting. So how many, like on a good day or on an average day, let's say on an average winter day, ski day, how many people on the premises?
On a weekend day, on an average weekend day, we will have anywhere from 800 to 1,000 visits per day.
Wow.
Our maximum so far has been 1,800 visits in a single day.
Wow.
And we've got, you know, the major holiday weekends, it's not uncommon to have 1,300, 1,500. But on the non-holiday weekends, I would say the average is 800 to 1,000, depending on, you know, what the temperature is like and what else is going on in the community. So, and that's a comfortable...
That's the next question. Is it comfortable for the visitor? So no long wait? Is it flowing smoothly?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, you know, the first season, the wait, you know, to get a tube, you know, it might have been 4 hours that we were booked up, you know, and now we've got triple the number of tubes, more than triple the number of tubes, and literally on any weekend you can come up and walk up and get a tube. And since we doubled the size of it, you've got plenty of terrain to slide, and you know, there's no problem there. And the old tubing area, we took advantage and created a second terrain park, you know, with different ride over features, rails and boxes and things like that.
Is that in use?
Yes.
I'm extremely scared of that. Yep. Like, I just see my back broken or something like that. But
yeah, so admittedly, it's for the younger
the
younger crowd. Not that we're old, but and then because we had that rope toe from the old beginner area, we modified the motor on that, and we added that rope toe into that second terrain park that we have. So we feel like we've made some great decisions that benefited both the tubing public and population, as well as the skiing and snowboarding side. And really feel now that we're comfortable, for the next, few years, and kind of let the business settle in. And, we've got plans, that we're discussing as a board and a group, increasing the size of the lodge and, that sort of thing. But we really feel like we're in a comfortable spot now where we're not trying to get ahead of the demand.
Good things take a while.
Yeah.
So very interesting. I'm fascinated. To make it run so smooth on an average day, how many supporters? What's your staff? Like, is it 35 people behind the scenes? Is it 55 people? Like, how many employees? Like, on a regular day, so a visitor usually doesn't see what's all happening. There's an operator for the lift. There's how many people work at you?
Well, we've got about 150 employees through the winter season. The majority of those are part-time individuals. So those are folks that may be retired, might be school-age kids, want to work out there to be part of the atmosphere and the excitement. Treat it more as a hobby, especially like some of our ski instructors. On a weekend day, we probably have about 50 people on staff at any one time. It takes two operators for each of the lifts that we have, one at the top, one at the bottom, and then there's some roving employees that help check tickets or provide breaks for employees. And, that we've got the full staff inside the lodge for both the food and beverage, as well as the ticketing and the rentals and the tubing staff. Yeah, so.
Quite an operation. Yeah.
Yeah.
But like one thing that is new, I think, since reopened, is the year-round use, correct? We have skiing and cross-country skiing, downhill skiing, cross-country skiing. We know we have all that in the winter, but that I think is just because Lake Life is year-round, and I always say Lake Life is not just during the summer months. Lake Life is year-round also in the winter with groomed snowmobile trails, with the mountain now, with a lot of ice fishing, anything. So not just blue water, but also, if there's ice, there's also water underneath, I always say. That's kind of like how I see. But now the good thing on the flip side, there's even more in the summer than one believes. So there's trails and you do heavily mountain biking.
Right, right. And before we leave winter, I would be remiss if I didn't mention that, part of that number of employees that we have or folks working out there in a given day, we also have a volunteer ski patrol group that provides, first aid service to people. So, we could have a dozen ski patrol on staff, and again, those are all volunteer folks. They go through an extensive 100-hour training to be certified as an outdoor emergency care technician.
Okay.
And, we've got doctors on staff, teachers, professors, people in the community. So that is a great service that they provide for us. And then one thing we didn't touch on that leads right into the summer is that we also rent fat bikes in the wintertime, and we groom trails specifically for fat tire bikes.
Really?
So we have a small snowmobile with a pull behind roller that grooms and packs the trails, and then you can winter mountain bike or fat bike.
How many people do that?
That's a much smaller number. Yeah. We've probably had rough count, you know, 75 or okay. so that kind of come out to do that activity. But it's really fun. It's just, you know, for those that snowshoe or cross country ski, and they actually get out into the woods mm-hmm. away from some of the noise and stuff, it's just a really enjoyable experience to be out in the middle of the woods in winter, you know, especially when it's a brisk day and the sun is shining. Mm-hmm. It's just really neat. You know, there's so many tracks and stuff that you see through the snow that the wildlife, you know, yeah. are running around out there that you don't necessarily see in the summertime.
No evidence. Yeah.
No evidence of it. Yeah. Right. So that's a really, you know, fun and unique thing that we provide in the wintertime.
Yeah. No. And I good interference here. How many miles? Not the downhill. Now I forgot. Cross country skiing. Is it 10 miles of cross country skiing? Five.
Yeah, we've got about 5 kilometers of cross country skiing. That's the funny thing is Nordic skiing always goes by kilometers.
Of course. And I'm a kid guy.
Right. And mountain biking is still on the mileage side, you know. So we still go back and forth between that. But we've got about 5 kilometer of specific Nordic ski trail, and then we've got about 10 miles of mountain bike trail on property. In the winter time, again, we groom about 3 miles or 5K of bike trails as well.
On top of the 5K Nordic?
Correct, yeah. The Nordic ski trails are separate from mm-hmm. the winter fat biking trails.
So we have at least 10K of trail system besides the hill, the mountain, right. The downhill, I was going to say.
Correct, yeah. We have 350 acres, 200 that is owned by the City of Detroit Lakes, operated by Detroit Mountain Recreation Area, mm-hmm. and then Detroit Mountain Recreation Area leases another 150 acres okay. With trails. So it's a fairly good size property.
It's really large. And so now... now we are close to shut down winter and prepare for summer, and like we have a month or something where things need to be catched up and prepared. So now what's coming now? Now is mountain bike. Is it also, can I just hike?
Yeah. So now we actually are just going to be opening up the trails this coming weekend. And you know, so we're in the mud season right now as the snow continues to melt. We still do have snow.
Oh, really?
Out on the hill. So there's still piles out there, and you know, still drying out from that. We've had some of our staff out clearing the mountain bike trails, so you know, they're taking care of any
branches,
downed limbs and trees, and going out with a rake and a leaf blower and kind of clearing it up. And we'll be ready to open. So we, you know, we try to open as early as we possibly can in the spring. And that's really just a matter of, you know, once the frost is out of the ground, once the trails dry out a little bit, and that we're not going to be leaving ruts and creating more work for ourselves, we open the trails up, and the bike trails, hiking trails will remain open into November. And, you know, we typically close our trails for hunting season, just because we have neighboring property owners that hunt on the land. So we try and keep our traffic at a minimum so we're not disturbing their hunt, and for safety as well. So we've got the biking trails they'll be opening up, and we encourage people to come out and hike as well. They can hike on the biking trails. The bikers have the right of way on the hiking or on the biking trails. If you mountain bike on a hiking trail, the hikers have the right of way, but these are specifically bike trails, so it goes in reverse.
Oh, we have two designated
trails. No, they're the same, but there's some places out there that have primarily hiking trails, and if you bike on them, you've got to yield to the hikers.
Yeah.
And then, but you can hike on the bike trails, you can hike on the Nordic ski trails, You can hike on the ski hill itself. You know, we've got people that come out and use it as a workout. So they hike up and down the hill. In the summer months, the community center has a boot camp that they do out there in the mornings, that, you know, they're running up and down the ski hill. You know, so there's just a, you know, it's kind of your preference of what type of workout and experience you want. And, you know, the one thing's, you know, obviously people have to be mindful of in the summertime in Minnesota is that we have bugs. You know, so the Nordic ski trails and the bike trails are in fairly thick wooded areas. So the bugs can present a problem if you're not prepared for that.
Yeah, as part of our life, I would say. But also, speaking of events, you have a handful of events every year. Like you have a plunge for skiing, but like in the summer, do you have concerts, open air? Didn't you have something?
We do a couple events each summer season. Yeah, our funnest event, the one I like the best, you just said, was the pond plunge or the spring splash, we call it, and that's kind of to celebrate the end of the ski season, where we create a big pool. It's about 20 feet across, 15, 20 feet across, and about 40, 50 feet long. You know, skiers and snowboarders attempt to cross it, so they get a running start at it, and they have to ski across it.
How deep is it?
It's about 3.5 feet deep, you know, so...
You get wet.
yeah, and there's some good wipeouts and crashes and stuff, and that's pretty common for most ski areas, is they put together that pond skim, pond plunge, spring splash, you know, whatever they name it. So that's just, that's such a fun event, and I love that because... it just gets everybody involved in it, the community as well. We have such a huge draw that come out that aren't skiers or snowboarders, and they just come out to watch it. If you visit our Facebook page, there's lots of great photos of really fun costumes and crashes and things like that. So but you're moving into the spring and summer season, we do a couple events. You know, some are more our events, some we're just the host site for. For example, in May, we've got the Birding Festival that Detroit Lakes puts on. So they use our facility as kind of their launching point each morning for their birding excursions. So it's fun to have that group out. They've been doing that for the last couple of years, and they'll be there again this May. And again, you know, we're a community asset. We want to bring as many people and as many users out to the facility as possible. Typically, they don't bird at our site, although there, you know, we certainly have lots of wildlife out there, but they go into the prairies and the marshes and things like that and looking for those exotic species and those rare birds. So that's coming up. We host a mountain bike race in May as well, called the Shakedown, and that's part of the Minnesota Mountain Bike Series race. Detroit Lakes is lucky enough to have two of those races out of the 12 races, our race at Detroit Mountain, and then the Laddies Lopet at Maple Log. So that's in September. And you know, moving into June, this year we are hosting a Kiwanis event at the mountain. I think it's still kind of under name creation, but Blues and Barbecue. So they're going to do a barbecue out there, and then they've got Lamont Cranston band coming. So that's Friday, June 30th. And that'll be a new event for us. We're kind of looking forward to that. Again, we're just the host site for it. And then July, not really anything heavy in July. July is really typically that, you know, that lake time. And it's tough for us to compete, you know, with events out there in July. We are open 7 days a week for mountain biking and rental and things like that. So we're still in operation. We just don't have any signature events happening at that time. And then in August, you know, since the first season, before the first season opened, we've done a Music on the Mountain event. And we've, you know, the first couple of years we had, you know, our local talent. We had a band called Sagebrush and another local band, Hardwood Groove, play. So they played the first couple seasons, and our board wanted to try and bring in a bigger name. And so last season, or last summer, we had the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, which have been around for decades and really well known. And that was a great event. We had about 1,000 people come out for that. And then I can announce on your podcast, who's coming for this year's Music on the Mountain.
Who's the star?
This has not been announced anywhere.
Not
been announced anywhere.
Let us know.
So we are bringing in Sawyer Brown this year. And Sawyer Brown played a number of years ago at Bash on the Beach. And was just a sellout crowd. So he's a great country star. And so that should be another big hit for that. Yep, Friday, August 25th, I believe, is the date of that. You know, so those are you know, our big events during the summer. Of course, we have some other, you know, races and events and stuff like that, you know, that people should check our calendar for. You know, those are the ones I've talked about so far are really the don't miss. If you're in town, you've got to come out for those.
We will highlight those each weekend and we'll reannounce those in the month of June and August and forth going. But how do people find you? Of course, Google, but it's DetroitMountain.com?
Yep, DetroitMountain.com.
Okay.
So we've got a great website with all of our information. So our hours of operation, our rental prices, and a calendar of events, and all of that stuff. We're also on Facebook, fairly popular on Facebook, and that seems to be a good avenue for communication. We have about 9,500 followers.
That's big.
Yeah, so you know, we do a lot through Facebook, and then kind of you know, follow the Instagram and Twitter thing as well.
Yeah.
By far the Facebook page is the most popular.
It's the right medium. Yeah.
Yeah.
The social aspect. You're a social destination. So, well, good. Well, I think we learned a lot, and it's really exciting. And it probably will not be the first and last time that we meet. Maybe speaking right before another big event or season updates. I think that was great. I'm really happy that you came, Jeff, and shared a little bit more of the significance of the history and the size. And I really like to learn that there's so many helping hands involved to understand that at peak, almost 2,000, but on average 800 to 1,000 visitors to handle, not only handle, but to assist, and then also the rescue. Like, if in the event that something happens, that we have, of course, doctors, first aid. So it's a challenge. I'm sure it's what a great asset to not only local Detroit Lakes, but the whole region, going from like in a 75-mile radius, most likely. That's probably the area where you attract
absolutely
individuals or even more. And I like it. I'm a emotional supporter. I hope to visit more often in the future as Harry grows and such, and I'll make note of the August event. And I'm excited. I'm probably going to try the mountain biking. Harry and I got little bikes, and we were talking about that last year already, and we'll definitely make a swing by soon. And do you want to add anything else for the audience?
No, I don't think so. I mean, we just welcome the opportunity to share, you know, our story, what we do out there, every opportunity we can. And, you know, we are surprised every day by the number of new faces that we see. So that tells us, you know, one, that the, you know, the word is still getting out, you know, that we're open and in operation. But we're also excited that there's just a lot of people, new people experiencing it.
Still growing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, the more people we have out participating in those outdoor activities, you know, getting out and staying active, the better. I mean, we just love to see it.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for coming. Thanks again. And DetroitMountain.com to research all necessary information for your visit. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, Dirk.
Yeah, this was already our newest episode of the Lake Life Weekend podcast. We sure hope you enjoyed it. Tune in again next week with another great guest and updates. Always check out our website, lakelifeweekend.com. And if you have some comments, please feel free to email us at hello@lakelifeweekend.com. And you have a wonderful weekend ahead.